Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Getting It Out Podcast. That was Demonizer by Hands of Goro. They're a Bay Area heavy metal trio. They've got a new self-titled record that drops today, March 1st. They are formed by members of Spirit Adrift, Night Soufflé, and former live members of Carcass and Angel Witch. So if you like any of those things, You probably heard a little bit of it there. Maybe not so much Carcass, but you get my drift. Classic sounding heavy metal. Pretty impressive. This is one of the singles off of their self-titled debut LP. But again, you can hear all of it today. It's available now everywhere. It might be the first full album I dive into this March 1st. It may not be. Who knows? We'll see. I'll tell you this. Not only does the band rock, but they take great promo pictures too. Seek them out. But not right away, of course. First, I need you to open up your podcast listening app of your choice and go ahead and rate and review Getting It Out Podcast 5 stars. Truly appreciate it. Make sure you hit that subscribe button too. I got to remind you to do more of that. It's been working lately and I appreciate that a whole bunch. Truly. So please, just 1 minute, hit the buttons. Thank you. On this episode of the podcast, I've got an interview with Øystein Bruun of Norwegian metal titans Borknagar. But before we go across the world, let's go across state lines. For the greatest thrash band to ever exist right now in New Jersey, Hot Zone.
Kick it! Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies! Peace to my family, make friends till they bury all the places we've been! We're never sitting it out, we be getting it in! Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been! We're never sitting it out, we'll be getting it in! Where you getting it out?
Yeah! One more time, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to Getting It Out Podcast. That subscribe button's more important than anything. If you want to be extra nice, go over to Patreon, sign up. You could have heard this interview a couple weeks ago. It's my conversation with Borknagar's Øystein Bruun. Right now, also on the Patreon, available for you, the Patreoners, the Patroners, the Patrons, is an interview with Justin Fornoff of Wrist Meat Razor and Chris X of Reptilian Records. I got to get back on top of the record label Spotlight, which I will be doing. That will be the first one of the year. I'll play catch up. I'll make sure I get these things in. Also coming soon to the Patreon is conversations with Bokassa and Locrian, not to mention some other stuff that I'm not ready to tell you about. If you're wondering, hey, Dan, whatever happened to Punks and Dunks? Well, perhaps that was launched a little prematurely, but I needed to do it. I needed to get it out, much as I had to get this podcast out 7 years ago. I just had to start it. I had to get the wheels in motion. And now that they're in motion, they have stalled, and that's okay. I kind of expected that to happen. I'm going to pick back up on it after a little vacation. Vacation? Am I going on a vacation? I am. Yes, it's only March, but don't worry. I have to go someplace magical. And upon my return, the old gears for Punks and Dunks, a basketball podcast brought to you by gettingitout.net, will get to turn in again. And I'm very much looking forward to it. But for now, I'm not going to say much more about it. I'm not going to say much more of anything. And unlike the last episode, I haven't stumbled across any more documents from my childhood to share with you. So I'm just going to share with you a song from Borknagar and their recently released 12th full-length album, Fall. This track is called Nordic Anthem, and then my conversation with Øystein. right. Hey, so I wanted to point out that my first introduction to the band was the track Oceans Rise on the 1999 Century Media Cop, the Identity 5 compilations. I used to love the Identity compilations that Century Media put out. They introduced me to like several bands from all sorts of genres. It was a great source for me. So I'm curious, for you growing up in your early days, were there any compilations that introduced you to a wide variety of bands that you became to love?
To be honest, no, I can't remember that. I grew up with a father, an old hippie. My father was an old hippie and he was a huge collector of LPs and stuff. So he used to, because in Bergen and in Norway at that time, you couldn't get hold of, at least the most I guess suspect stuff. I don't know, but he imported a lot of LPs from UK. And so I kind of grew up in this kind of underground movement a little bit in a sense, so that's my kind of introduction to music, as a little toddler, listening to LPs and, he was like, recording the LPs on big tapes and stuff because he had to resell the LPs to finance, to fund the next shipment from UK and stuff like that. So, that's my kind of introduction to music, I would say. When it comes to compilation CDs, not really. I remember when we signed with Century Media, they were stressing a lot because just as we signed with them, they had, they needed some song from us on some compilation, I remember. And we end up with an instrumental song just because that was the only thing that was kind of finished, Yeah. a rough mix, but actually. But I think that was my meeting with the whole compilation thing as well back in the day. Of course, before that, I was like, since 89, 90, I was into, the underground scene of, tape trading and right. flyers and all that, did that for a bunch of years. And I don't remember, but I guess there was some, we shared some cassettes and stuff and things like that. But not official stuff though.
That's interesting that you mentioned your dad kind of doing a version of tape trading that you grew up with. And then you start doing it later too. That's cool.
Yeah, I kind of did that. I remember, I got into music through my father, I guess. And since then, I Pink Floyd is my big mothership when it comes to music. But later on, when I started, to be, getting, I guess, like 15, 16 or something, we met one guy in the area where the Immortal guys, at that time, Old Funeral, Amputation and all that, before Immortal guys was in, it's kind of different part of the city. But at that time he was running an underground fan scene called Sadistic Noise Mag, I remember. And, that was my kind of gateway into this whole underground scene. And yeah, that was kind of cool because it was a little bit of the same, thing as my father did, this kind of from at that time boy room to boy room. But I spent all my money on postal costs and sending cassettes. I even had I got some stuff from the post office because at some point I remember I had to walk to the local post office in order to get all the letters and all the stuff I got in the mail in a big bag, because there wasn't no chance in hell they can get everything into my parents' post box and stuff like that. So it was cool times. It's I'm a nostalgic person, so it's good memories from that time. It was exciting. At that time music was almost like a little bit of a different thing. It was so distant and so astray in a sense because we didn't have a smartphone and internet back then. We couldn't just scroll YouTube or we couldn't just Google a band and find out what's going on. We there was basically nothing. So I remember when I got into this through my friend, still a good friend of mine, when he started this Sadistic Noise Mag back in the day. That opens kind of a whole new world, All of a sudden, after a few months, I had, contacts all over the place. I was getting, letters from Malaysia and all sorts of countries, even Morocco back then, I remember. And to such an extent, I remember that at some point I could just, look at the letter and the handwriting and, okay, this is from US, because it's kind of clear to me, that's just a detail in all this, but kind of cool little detail that, you know, it seems like people have, you know, people, different countries have different writing, you know, in a
yeah,
sense.
Sure.
There is a kind of, you know, there is, I don't know if this tradition or the way people, you know, kids learn to write in school and stuff like that. But that was kind of cool little detail that I, you know, I kind of catched back then, I remember. But, you know,
it's interesting.
Those days are lost in a sense or gone.
Right. Yeah, they're gone at least. Yeah. We can remember them. Right. But so that, were you doing all that, the letter writing, tape trading before you started playing music, or did that one come before the other?
Yeah, it was kind of, I don't remember exactly, but I think I had a, you know, very cheap guitar. My uncle or something, I spent, you know, used a little bit in between. But yeah, I think it was pretty much on the same time I got my, started to kind of pin out that, you know, I want to play music. I want to, you know, make music myself and stuff. And in the same kind of, you know, a lot of things happens. I don't know what's, you know, it's not college, but secondary school, I guess. You know, when I started there, I all of a sudden, you know, there was a big school in my area with, like, some, you know, pupils from all over the place came meeting in a kind of a, yeah, big school. And then I met, you know, some other people that was happened to be interested in, you know, at that time, kind of heavy metal, more like you accept, early accept, and Twisted Sisters and the mid 80s, you know, big Stay Hungry and all that. And I remember I met, you know, a couple of guys that was also into this kind of music. And from there on, then on, kind of, you know, things kind of just evolved and you met people. And of course, when you grow older, you kind of get a little bit of a bigger action zone, so to speak. You meet new people and all that. So it was kind of, yeah, I guess the old analog way of doing it, of networking, I guess.
I'll be 40 this year. So I got to grow up kind of like that too. You know, we had a little bit more advanced in technology and a way to reach out to people. But the internet was like infantile stages when I was a teenager, you know what I mean? So for me, a lot of it was the same. A lot, you know, to find out about. I remember a very similar story where you were saying about the too many records or whatever, CDs or tapes to get in the mailbox. I remember my parents getting pissed off at me because there was too much stuff in the mail. They couldn't deliver the mail because there was too many, you know?
Oh, yeah. Glorious times. And yeah, it was. And at some point, I remember actually, I think it was when I signed with Centromedia, maybe even before that with Malicious Record, which was a small label at that time, but still I don't know why, but they had a lot of funds. They was like kind of really willing to, I remember it was like, he was doing the deal and he was like, yeah, you need a fax machine because, you know, I need to be able to, you know, send you stuff and, you know, quickly. So at that point, I remember I got a check from, I think it was Malicious Records, that he sent me a check. And, you know, again, back in the days with a check, and I got the check to buy a fax machine and stuff. And, you know, that was kind of, you know, it was different. But yeah, it's I guess we learned a lot. And you know, that kind of network that I kind of established at that time, of course, some people, you know, is not part of it anymore and, you know, lost contact or something. But it's really cool, though, because there is actually quite a lot of people that, you know, we still keep in touch, you know, after 30 years or even more, you know. So it's kind of some of those connections turn out to be friendship for life, basically. And it's really cool. And, you know, that is some of the, you know, aging and getting older and all the stuff, you start to reflect about everything that has happened. And one of the big, you know, privilege I think of when it comes to my career and or the whole music thing is that, you know, I have friends in all over the place. You know, I could, you know, be stranded in some city somewhere at some point. And most likely I could just call a friend and, hey, you know, I need some, you know, whatever help or, you know, guidance or whatever it is, you know, and just that kind of feeling that you have people and good friends all over the planet. That's a quite cool thing, actually.
It is. It's awesome. Similarly, I have friends, not quite to that level, but at least people that I know in a lot of places. And my wife and I will talk about it sometimes. And actually a friend of mine was over this weekend talking about how he was just randomly running into people while in Europe, you know, and he's a musician too. It's really a similar story for all of us that have been involved in this stuff for a long time, but I think it's super cool. Just another thing to touch on or to relate to when you're talking about getting checks. I remember when I had to order all my stuff, I would have to get money orders. So like as a 12, 13 year old, I was walking down to the store, like buying money orders so I could send, you know, because I didn't have a checking account or even a bank account or anything. But anyway, but of course, you mentioned signing to Century Media with your band, Borknagar. That's essentially what we're getting to here, is that you got a new record, Fall. It's what number album is it for you now?
Well, you know, it's a 12th album, like per se. What we also did way back, we did a kind of best of album. I think Century Media did something. So it's you know, it's all kind of versions and stuff like that. But when it comes to album, like genuine new albums, we have 12 albums in the catalog, so to speak. So it's you know, it's a bit, I guess.
It's a lot. It's good though. And the one thing that strikes me about when I listen to your band, the early stuff and this newest record, Fall, is that it still sounds like Borknagar. And there's been little differences. There's been evolutions. There's been changes, but primarily it just sound, you've been so consistent over these years, despite you being the only original member at this point. Why do you think it is? Is that all you that's keeping that similar sound throughout all these records?
Yes and no, I guess. In one perspective, I started the band back in the day, and I had some quite clear and kind of visions about this whole thing. You know, I was not that kind of kid that was into the idea about being a rock star and being on stage and playing guitar in front of people. That wasn't my cup of tea. I'd never kind of seen myself as an entertainer of any sorts, really. But I was very much involved, you know, in music, and also I have a very kind of, I don't know, creative side, I guess. I always loved to build things, you know. My father was an architect, and he was drawing a lot of houses, and I also built, you know, our house back then when I was a kid, and I helped him a lot and stuff. So I, you know, this kind of, I had this very crisp and clear idea back in the day when I started to play around with the ideas about this band, that I wanted to make something. I wanted to make my own musical bubble, in a sense. You know, I wanted to make something that is beyond and above everything and doesn't follow any trend or stuff like that. So I, even back then, you know, my very simple and almost cheesy idea was that, you know, I don't want a band name that means anything. I want a band name, constructed band name that only represent one thing, and that is the band and the music and stuff like that. Because this notion to me, this is kind of musical freedom, you know, in a sense. You know, musical autonomy has always been very important to me, to be able to do whatever I want musically. I mean, yeah, I could, for next album, I could do a jazz album, blues album. Probably will not do that ever. But you know, the idea that I can do it without, you know, needing to defend myself or, you know, needed to, or, you know, all that stuff. So this musical independence for me has always been very important. And combined with the creativity and maybe my little bit weird way of you know, I don't know, approaching music, you know, and I was never classical trained at all. You know, I had a guitar teacher for a couple of days. I remember my mother had, you know, got someone to come by once a week or something. But after the third time or the second time, she just called my mother and told that, you know, that it's no point in doing this because there is nothing, you know. So that was kind of cool. 10 years after, you know, I met him on a record shop, and the records was on the wall and stuff like that. I was like, hey, ho, I'm saying to something, you know. So that was a kind of sweet range thing. But I guess I just did my own thing, you know, and I kind of stood by it since day one. And I think maybe that is one of the crucial aspects here, that, you know, I've never compromised. And yeah, there has been some rough, you know, people, interest, commercial labels, managers, whatnot, you know, you should do like this, maybe you should do like this and that and stuff like that. And maybe the next time, I remember we did the acoustic album back in the day, the original album. And that was an idea I had for a long, long time. Because actually, when I started writing music for the band, that was acoustic. I mean, I came into this whole band thing from an acoustic starting point, so to speak, because I got an acoustic guitar and that inspired me and so on and so forth. So So yeah, I don't know. I don't have a simple answer to it, but I guess I'm stubborn. I've always done my own stuff, and I've been, you know, standing quite firm in whatever people says. And back in the day, sometimes that was not the easiest thing, you know, because there was a lot of interest going on, and you should do this and that in order to sell more records or have an eye catcher on the cover. I remember it was suggested to me, yeah, you should probably have a naked woman on the cover or something with blood or whatever. I was like, it's not happening, you know. That's not us. That's not my band. I'm not doing that. Yeah, but you know. So I have been quite stale and firm in my way of doing things. I guess that has something to say. And throughout the years, I think that, you know, the guys that have been playing in the band and stuff has kind of found their way into my musical world in a sense. You know, so yeah, kind of just evolved the way it does. That's my best answer, I guess.
It's a good answer. It's a good answer. And it makes sense. And it's, and I mean, anybody who listens to the band throughout the years would hear what you're saying. I love progressive metal to a point, right? There's some progressive metal, but not like the super proggy fuck around music. You know, that's like too much for me. Like, I like the style that you play in. And, but I also know sometimes you get, pigeonholed into the black metal world, which there's so much more to your music than that. And that to me is like such a small element in especially the new record. I know it, you know, it comes up, it pops up, it's there, it's gone. But do you find that there's often people that have a misconception about what your band sounds like without even hearing it?
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I've kind of spent my whole career, like 30 years now, trying to escape all these musical tags and classifications. And, you know, we humans, we kind of tend to, I don't know, quantize things. We tend to, you know, make everything easy to digest and, right, you know, all that stuff. We like the safe, very often we like, you know, humans like the safe road back home in a sense. But, you know, I don't know what to say, but you know, for me, the whole music thing, the whole you know, what I've been doing for the last 30 years is trying to, again, do something unique, but also always kind of be in a kind of a musical movement. You know, for me, music should evolve and progress all the way. That makes to me music alive. I would never, you know, if I found myself walking in circle and on all of a sudden started to copy myself and that stuff, I would rather just quit. That doesn't make any sense to me. So for me, it's I always, you know, has always been about leaning forward and always want to, you know, seek new musical horizon and new musical peaks and whatnot, you know, and I try to escape all those tags. That's kind of been my goal. So when I get the question from a journalist, you know, how would you like to describe your music? You know, I kind of sometimes just throw it back and, hey, that's your job. You know, I just do my thing and, right, and you know, whatever. And also I have this kind of philosophical idea about music that I want my music to be above, you know, this, something beyond and above, you know, politics, religion, even language. Sometimes, you know, the really great music in my world, as a music lover myself, that's the music you can't really describe, you know. That's a music you can't really put into a box or kind of quantize or anything like that, you know. That is, to me, the really, really good music that kind of stirs something in you that is kind of beyond and above everything. And I'm not a religious person. I've never been. I'm a hardcore atheist. But if there is anything religious about my life, that's my music, you know.
Interesting. And I like that. I like that point, because there are a lot of bands. My favorite bands tend to be bands that I don't know how to categorize. You mentioned Pink Floyd earlier. That's always been a band to me that I used to always say it's hard for me to imagine that there were people in that band.
Indeed. For me, that's mothership of all music. Yeah, because you know, my father was a big fan and played, you know, he blew out his speakers, remember, in the Sunday mornings with you know, Pink Floyd songs. I was waking up in the Sunday, you know, sun outside, and I have a lot of, you know, emotions connected to the whole Pink Floyd thing. But that was, I guess, my kind of very kind of entry to the whole music, the whole thing about enjoying music and, you know, You know, this is food for the soul kind of experience with music, you know, that it meant something to me. It changed me somehow to the better. Not changed me as a person, but it empowered me, or it kind of gave me something in life that, you know, nothing else would give, you know. And that's mm-hmm. also a notion I have with my own music, that, you know, I want to try to do something that nobody else can, you know, give away, if that makes any sense. You know, I want to make some kind of music that is unique. And if people buy a record from us, they definitely know that this is something that they don't get anywhere else, that they can't buy it on McDonald's, or, you know, it doesn't, right, you know, taste like a Big Mac, if you get my point. That has always been very important for me. And also very much my reason for doing this all this year. I'm a very kind of...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
In a sense, a little bit of a restless guy. I like to create stuff. I like the process of stuff. And when I'm done, I want to move forward. I can't just sit around and, you know, fiddle around and don't do anything, wait for something to happen. So, and that kind of also goes with my music. You know, I need to challenge myself. I need to, you know, climb a even steeper mountain, you know, each and every time, just as a way of putting it. But yeah.
I get it. And well, that kind of brings me to one of my questions I want to ask you about. It's been 5 years since the release of True North. Seems like, I mean, that's not a long time. That's kind of a normal time for a band to release music, but you're pretty consistent and do a lot of records. With those delays, I don't know, is that considered a delay to you, or is this like on schedule?
Oh yeah, it's you know, I think, you know, what fucked up the whole schedule a little bit was the Corona thing, of course, the sure. pandemic's going on for 1.5, 2 years or something. You know, that really kind of didn't really set us back, but that kind of changed everything. You know, the whole, we were supposed to, after True North, which was very well received, we was lining up basically a world tour with the US tour first with Rotten Christ, and then it was supposed to Europe, a headline tour in Europe, and yeah, a bunch of festivals all around. It was even talking about, you know, doing Japan and Australia and stuff. But I think it was like a couple of days before it was supposed to fly out. Everything was closed. That's it, you know. I got a message one night from our tour manager in the US, and he was like just sending a picture of Trump, I remember, and the front page of Newsweek or something like that. USA is closed kind of thing. That was the only thing. I was like, what the fuck are we doing now? Yeah. And of course, we had invested a lot of money, you know, in work visas and rehearsals and pre-productions and all that. But we had to adapt as everybody else, you know, and we survived. But we had this kind of lingering feeling that we kind of wanted to complete the whole circle with True North before, you know, starting with a new album, in a sense. We always write music. So I guess at that time, my songs were probably written already then at least some of it. But you know, it's also something about sitting down. Okay, let's go. Let's press the big green button and get going with things, you know, to arrange the studios and all that stuff. So we kind of wanted to make a full circle with True North before kind of heading into a new album. But if the pandemics wouldn't, you know, I don't know, maybe the album would be released last year or the previous year or something, maybe a year before, I don't know. Right. You know, that's something that, you know, doing new music, new album and stuff like that, that's something we do when we feel ready to do it. And that's maybe somewhat the privilege now after 12 albums, and we have done this for 30 years. You know, we spend the time we need to to make an actual, what can I say, worthy album. We don't haste it. We don't stress it. We don't, you know, to me, the process of creating a new album should be a fun and interesting, cool thing to do, not something you have to do in order to, you know, make some money and have food on the table next year or something like that. You know, again, back to this musical autonomy kind of thing that I'm clinging on to.
Well, you've been with Century Media almost the whole time. I know there was a brief, you jumped off briefly, but came back. Is part of your relationship with them, is that afforded, that autonomy afforded to you as part of your relationship with them, a trust you have between the band, the label? They haven't, you know.
Oh yeah. I think, you know, we know each other very well. And even though, you know, by now a lot of people, you know, because the ownership now is Sony Music is kind of the owners of Sony Century Media. And we got some comments on that. But the cool thing about Century Media is that some of the guys, you know, I met back in the mid 90s is still working on the label and still, you know, kind of share the same passionate leaning forward in the name of music kind of attitude. It has been definitely ups and downs throughout all these years. Of course we have been disagreements and, you know, all that stuff. And still there is some disagreements, but in the big scope of things, I mean, it's beautiful people working there, and they're really into the music they're working on and dedicated to their work and stuff like that, and so passionate about the album. So of course in the early stage of the cooperation, of course there was a little bit, you know, where are we, and I was young as well, you know. I didn't know the business that good when we did the first album for Century Media. I didn't know how actually things worked and what to expect kind of thing, you know. And I remember, you know, all this in the mid 90s, late 90s, when kind of this Norwegian black metal thing exploded. All of us was really young. And all of a sudden, big record companies came, you know, and wanted to sign everybody, and including us and stuff. And I think looking back now, I think a lot of us was a little bit unmature, actually, a little bit, you know, too young to deal with this old big business thing coming along, you know, in a sense, you know. So, of course, the first years was a little bit, you know, trying to find out where, you know, how does this work and how does, you know, all those things. But over the years, we have kind of tuned very well in on things. And I feel at least now and for the last 3, 4, 5 albums, I don't know, but for the last period we have been signed with Century Media since, I think it is like 2011 or something, we signed the last deal with them. It's really good friends working there, and we support each other. And I know that, you know, they trust me as I'm, you know, in the role I have, and I really trust those guys, you know, what they do. So it's awesome, I would say. I see no reason to change that.
Right. That's good. That's great. At that comfortability, that home is something a lot of people, a lot of bands are certainly searching for. So for you to have had that for so long it's gotta be awesome.
Because I want, you know, the time I have and I want to spend wisely. And, you know, nowadays I feel, you know, that I also, of course, it's something to do. I'm more mature. I'm more laid back now with everything. And I'm, you know, I don't stress with small things anymore the way I did when I was 20s and stuff like that. But it's really a good thing to have good people around you when doing all this to be able to have this creative zone that you can spend the energy on being, you know, doing your job in a sense, you know. We are, of course, as a band, especially in the last years, we very much depend on trustworthy and good people around us, you know, helping us with whatever it is, you know, artwork or pictures or video productions or stuff like that. It takes a lot of the stress away when you're working with people that you can actually trust.
Would you say that you're like enjoying, it's easier to enjoy being in the band or maybe the business of being in a band now than it ever has been?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's also my point, maybe, that, you know, nowadays I take things more easy in a good way, I would say. It's not, I don't mean that I'm less passionate or less excited about the release or anything like that, but I don't stress about stuff I spent a lot of time with back in the day. I remember back in the day, I was stressed, freaked out because I read some kind of interview and somebody have misquoted me or something like that. And I was like, what the fuck? Everything is going, you know. Those things I don't, you know, now when I'm kind of pushing, I'm 48 now and pushing soon 50, I guess. So, you know, there is a lot of things, you know, there is not much things that, you know, will freak me out or anything like that. I know my place. I know my thing. I know my stuff when, you know, working on music and my studio and everything. So that is a good feeling because you can spend more of my mentality or my brain power on being creative rather than stressing around with, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Focus on the stuff that you want to focus on. That's important to you when you don't have a lot of other negativity and distractions that come with just doubt, you know, or insecurity, I guess. The album Fall, February 23rd, Century Media Records. You put out a couple singles for it already. Few singles, maybe three. One of them, Nordic Anthem. The last record was called True North. I've noticed this with your music. You always seem to reference home in a way. Is that important for the band, for you to pay homage or tribute to the place that you're from?
Yeah, kind of, but not in the kind of in a conservative or even nationalistic way. It's for me, it's more like, you know, the whole music thing for me, it's about, you know, being on a musical journey in a sense. And you start from one place, your home, and then you walk out in this world and do whatever you do. You know, in our case, we do touring and we do all that we do. So yeah, it's, you know, something with the anchor, something with this safe spot back home. I'm, you know, my safe zone is the coach in my house, you know, that is my ground zero in a sense. I think that kind of is very important for us as a, you know, as a human beings, but also the musical sense of it. And it's, for me, it's also about, in a sense, honesty. You know, if I was a painter, I would probably paint, you know, pine woods from Norway and waterfalls and mountains and stuff like that. I wouldn't draw, you know, beaches and you know, you know, you get my point. And
absolutely,
so for me, it's all has always been about being so honest and ethereal as possible, in a sense, you know. So that's it, I guess. It's a natural way of, and I still is a kind of, I've always lived on the countryside. I'm a very big, I'm very much inspired by nature. I, you know, back when I was a kid, except for listening to music with my father, you know, every Sunday, the church we went to was watching documentaries, you know, from David Attenborough and stuff like that. That was kind of, I'm not from a religious home, so we kind of, on this, every Sunday, I remember, there was like documentary about Africa or nature and stuff like that. And I've always been very fascinated by nature, basically. And I still live on the countryside. I still spend, you know, a lot of time in the forests here and the mountains. And you know, that's where I find my, home, my safety, to get energy and to reset and all that stuff, you know. So for me, I don't know. I have always had this kind of idea that I wanted to kind of share and show this beautiful nature that I live in a sense, you know. I want to portray the magic of reality in a sense, you know, as a quote from Richard Dawkins, though. But that is kind of some of my idea, that we don't go political about anything or religious about anything. We don't, you know, I want my music to be above and beyond everything, because to me, again, that is the really true great music, in my opinion. That's timeless and classic and beyond everything. But still, I guess that's, I lost my point a little bit, I guess. But
that's okay, because I want to say I never even considered, even with a song called Nordic Anthem, I never even considered or thought about it in the way of it being like a patriotism, a national like thing. I never even considered it because of the way you deliver it, because of the way the music sounds. Yeah. It comes across merely as inspiration for the music. So what I'm saying is that you do such a good job of portraying or putting out there what you want in the music. You're doing it excellently, because I'm not even thinking or hearing politically or anything like that. It's very well done. And to me, again, it sounds like being inspired by the place that you're from. And
yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, again, you know, that for me, it's about, you know, honesty and you know, it's just, as I said to you, if I was a painter, I would, you know, my paintings would be pine forests and mountains and waterfalls and stuff, you know. And I'm not a painter, I'm a musician, you know. So my natural way of expressing myself is through, you know, the scenery of nature and all that. Of course, there is a lot of, you know, attitude and ideas and stuff like that between the lines. I mean, I've always done that intentionally, that you can definitely use our music as easy listening and drinking some beer and have a good time with the boys. But you can also sit down with a headset and really dig into it. And if you dig, you will find a lot of small details here and there that is kind of can surprise in a little bit, you know, both when it comes to visual side of it and lyrically speaking. You know, we have an album called Universal. We also have a song called Universal. If you look at the cover, for example, on Winter Tries album, you will see a little fragment, a little hidden away of the old Nomain cover, for example. So, I love to kind of tie a little bit, bounce between the albums and you know, keep this. Yeah, it's kind of my strategy of trying to, you know, have this musical bubble going.
That's cool. I like it. I like how much care you put into all this, and of it's evident. But even when you just talk about it, I can tell how much you care about this. Seems like way more than just a project for you. And this many years and this many albums in, you're still killing it. The record's great. I've listened to it tons of times. I don't even remember which ones are singles because I've listened to it too many. You know what I mean? Like with the promo, I just know Nordic Anthem because I had it written down here. Yeah. But obviously, you've had a few out. Has the reception for what you've put out so far been well received?
Oh yeah, absolutely amazing. At least what I've seen so far. Mm-hmm. And we are starting to get some feedback from the label now. And of course, I've been talking with quite a lot of journalists the last couple of weeks. And you know, it has been at times almost mind blowing. You know, I don't know. Sometimes I a little bit, you know, get a little bit, you know, how should I react on all this positivity, you know. Yeah. And but it's great. It's awesome. And it's such a nice feeling after all the work, you know. It's shitload of work, and I sometimes don't think people understand, even, you know, people close to me don't understand how much time and energy you have to spend on an album, you know. At least the way we work and the way I work, mm-hmm. You know, I spend on this new album, I probably spent like thousands of hours in my studio here, you know, on details and producing and all that stuff. So it's a really good feeling when you actually get the physical copy and let the bird fly out in the world, in a sense. It's really cool. And when you also get the good feedback and people seem to enjoy it, and I get a lot, tons of messages from fans and stuff like that, which is extremely positive. So it looks really good. And yeah, of course, that makes me happy. And I feel humbled about it. I feel privileged sometimes, and I feel proud about it. You know, all these kind of facets of things. But what kind of, you know, growing older, maturing, and, you know, have kids now that's pretty much grown up. My daughter moved out and stuff. It's, you know, start to think about life, what's happening. Because, you know, I've been a special life in so many ways. But, it, you know, this, I kind of sometimes, you know, get a little bit kind of struck by the fact how, you know, how powerful music is. You know, it's basically nothing, you know. It's an idea that I, you know, play through my guitar, and there's some sound waves and stuff like that. It's not even anything physical about it, except from the CDs or the mediums though. But still, it's such an extremely powerful way of expressing yourself. And you know, all the reaction I get from fans, you know, that people are crying, and, you know, the music have helped them through tough times in life, for example, or, you know, all those kind of personal feedback, though, maybe that's the you know, things that, you know, the feedback I get these days that really, really kind of gets at me, if you get my point, on a personal level. You know, I'm kind of used to the whole, you know, the whole circle about, you know, with the reviews and interviews and the media and all that stuff. That's cool and great and all that stuff. And of course, it's awesome with great feedback. But no, actually stand there face to face with one fan or, you know, something like that, and they can tell you a story about their private life. And you get it into the kind of, you can relate to it in a sense, you know.
Sure.
That's really strong stuff. And it's a privilege to be able to do such a thing, you know. We was playing a festival in Mexico a couple of months ago, and I remember we probably brought the rain and the bad weather from Norway, I guess, because all of a sudden it started to rain and really kind of blowing, and there was actually thunders going on over the stage and everything. But, you know, the fans was like in raincoats and umbrellas and whatnot, you know, and we was entering stage and just hitting at it, and you can just see all the audience, all the shitloads of people, you know, just, you know, lighting up in a sense, you know. You can see the excitement and the joy in their faces and their eyes, you know. And I got this kind of just struck me, this thought that, you know, I can't quit doing this because it has such an, you know, powerful impact on so many lives in a sense. That's strong stuff. It is.
Yeah, it is. It is just really, I love hearing people like yourself talk about that. Just knowing that you recognize your impact is something that I think as fans, we don't know if you do. You know what I mean? Like we think.
Yeah. But yeah. I'm very kind of a kind of down to earth guy. I hope. Yeah. At least I like to think so, but I'm also a music fan, you know. I also love music. And again, you know, with Pink Floyd, for me, that gives me so much in my life, you know. It cuddles me when that's needed. It energizes me when I need that, you know. It kind of inspires me when I need that, you know. The music of Pink Floyd just gives me so much in life. And if I can just, you know, contribute with the same to some other people, a little bit of it, something like that, I'm a happy boy. I've kind of succeeded with my life in a sense, you know. It's, you know, I don't care too much about, you know, of course, sales and funds and money and all the business side of it. Of course, if the wheels keep spinning and we are able to do what we're doing, great. But the really important thing for me, you know, it's my kind of, my share love for music, basically. I mean, that is the driving force. That is the thing that keeps me going. To be honest, I don't need to do this anymore. I have a good life. I can just lean back and relax and, you know, retire. No problem, you know. But you know, I can't do that because to me, this is a life commitment. This is who I am. This is what I do. And my music is something that, you know, if I quit doing music at this time, I will probably just wither away and die probably. I don't know.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Oystin. The song you just heard was The Wild Lingers. That, of course, is on Fall, the new record from Borknagar, out now, available everywhere on Century Media Records. The true sign of myself loving a record is going back to it after I've listened to it several times in a row, as I do before I do an interview. And that's the case with Fall. So thanks to Oystin, not only for his time and conversation, but for writing music that I truly enjoy. I consider it a gift. His gift to me, not my gift to him. You know, you get what I'm saying? I think we're all following. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, this conversation, those musical selections. I know the tracks were a little long, but hey, I tried to find the shortest ones that were representative of the record and also considered quote unquote singles. And I think I did that. So I'll accept no arguments. Anyway, as I mentioned very early in the podcast, it is March 1st. It is a Friday. It is a new release day. You know what that means. New releases. So let's take a quick glimpse at what came out today or is coming out today or came out this week, however I phrase it. I'm not sure. I don't remember. Council Records put out a lot of cool hardcore stuff. Broken Hearts Are Blue. There's a Medicinal Kirby Kiss split. There is a Coffin Pricks EP, Delayed Gratification, released a new one from Ceramic. If You Worship at the Altar of Iron Maiden, Bruce Dickinson released a new solo record. Jade Dust, I should have mentioned that. That's a split release from Council Records and Extinction Burst. Hands of Goro, of course, who you heard at the beginning of the podcast, released a new record today. Merrimack, if you like black metal, that's out on Season of Mist. Modern Stars, which is like this drone-y stuff from Italy. They have a new record called Termination. There's a new Ministry record. It's called Hopium for the Masses. Proceed into that with caution. Here's two for a certain type of person. Piss Jeans put out Half Divorced. And Sheer Mag has released Playing Favorites. And Robert Fish has a new band called Unsufferable. Their self-titled EP is officially out today on Iodine Recordings. If you want your hardcore heavier, head over to France and check out the new Worst Doubt record. It's called Immortal Pain, out on Days. And if you'd rather stick to the classics, Zach Sabbath has released Doomed Forever, Forever Doomed, a compilation of Black Sabbath covers on Magnetic Eye Records. You want one more? Okay, one more. But why don't I just play you a track from it? This is Fouled Sanctity from Volcandra, whose new record, The Way of Ancients, is out now on Prosthetic Records. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Just even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.